Before we begin, Simon and I want to acknowledge that we're recording today on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nations. We also want to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the land of the Combermary people, and we'd like to acknowledge and pay respects to Wurundjeri and Combermary elders past and present.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
My name is Ryan Hamilton.
And my name is Super Prisreacher.
And you're listening to the podcast for Burnt Out Divas.
Trying to stay broadly relevant. The way you said your name was so random.
Because I was just staring straight in your eyes.
Yeah, we're like so direct eye contact. Maybe too much eye contact, you know. But we do it for the listeners.
What are you concerned about?
Oh, okay.
That's my checking question.
Everything. But currently, the fact that I think I might have a UTI, so that's like not ideal.
I think my wisdom tooth is going to blow up soon.
Oh, not blow up.
Well, it's either that or some sort of inflammation in my lower jaw.
We'll check back in next week. That'll be our check-in question.
I'm like, that hurts.
Did your wisdom tooth blow up last week? That'll be a good one.
Broadly culture.
Okay, I feel like our cultures kind of overlap.
It's all Oscars.
It's all Oscars. Even though the Oscars was like years ago, and usually I would like strike down anything that was like a week ago.
But we're not talking about any award winners.
No.
Because I don't even know who they are. I mean, I know Sinners didn't get Best Picture.
No, but it did really well.
It did.
Yeah. And Michael B. Jordan got Best Actor.
Yes. Over Timothy.
Yes. Lest we forget. Yeah. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay.
So apparently at the Oscars after party, do you know Jeremy O'Harris?
Yes.
How do you know Jeremy O'Harris?
Is he like he was on Emily in Paris.
He was on Emily in Paris.
Yeah.
Okay, that's so funny. So I know him because he's like a playwright in New York. He wrote Slave Play.
Which You're not better than me.
He wrote Slave Play,
Sorry.
Which is a Tony Award winning play.
Okay.
Exploring the reverberations of slavery.
Yep.
I have it on my bookshelf.
Oh.
I know.
Again, you're not better than me.
Back when
I have Netflix, so.
Back when Twitter was like not a pile of shit, I loved following his tweets. And I actually spent like maybe 6 months thinking he genuinely wrote Emily in Paris because he just kept tweeting about it. And I was like, yeah, I can see Jeremy O'Harris.
I could see that.
Tony Award winning playwright.
Yeah.
If he's involved in Emily in Paris, it's obviously as a writer. And then the season came out and I couldn't see him in the credits as writer. And then I saw his cameo and I was like...
You watched Emily in Paris though?
Yeah, up until Jeremy O'Harris's season.
Wow.
Well, I had to get to Jeremy O'Harris.
Of course. And then you were like, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally.
Anywho, so Jeremy O'Harris.
Yes.
Really cool playwright. But he was at the Oscars after party. And apparently the second he got to the Oscars after party, he had a couple too many martinis and went straight over to Sam Altman, who's the CEO of OpenAI.
Yeah.
And called him a Nazi to his face, specifically calling him the Goebbels of the Trump administration. Obviously, you know Goebbels.
I don't know.
What?
I don't know Goebbels.
So, you know, like the Nazis?
Yeah.
They're like really good at propaganda?
Yeah.
Goebbels was like the guy who like, he was like the, it was like the publicist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
PR.
Yeah, except like.
Really, all press is not good press.
Really horrible propaganda.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
He actually... Separately, as an aside, when you think about the 1936 Berlin Olympics, do you think about the fact that the Olympic torch relay comes from those Olympics? And you know why? Goebbels.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
I can't say that I'm always thinking about that, but like...
I'm constantly thinking about the Olympic torch relay as a Nazi tradition that we carry forward today.
Whoa. That's like interesting that that's like one of your favorite or like most criticized. You like talk about it the most when we're like looking at the Olympics.
The torch relay.
Yeah.
It's... You know what? We're getting off track.
Okay, we're getting off track.
Anywho... Jeremy O'Harris called Sam Altman the Goebbels of the Trump administration, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, crazy allegation.
Who is this reported by?
Page Six, who I think is a Gossip Mag.
Yes.
And the writing, I tell you, reeks of Gossip Mag.
Yes.
But, like,
it is a Gossip Mag.
The New York Times has gone on to, like, report it. So I'm
okay,
like,
awesome.
I trust it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, they're... Okay,
but
yes.
Then Jeremy O'Harris apparently sent an email follow-up to Page Six being like, I made a mistake when I called him Goebbels. I actually should have called him Friedrich Flick. Now, Friedrich Flick was a German industrialist who did a lot of manufacturing for the Nazis and was indicted for war crimes after the fact.
Mm.
And I'm just like, I love the doubling down. He was like, yeah, I was drunk and I did make a mistake. I didn't go hard enough. Like,
that's
nothing
so something
but respect.
You would do that. Yeah.
No, and I think, like, call people out. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And, like, how do you feel about, like, celebrities, you know, like, really hating on AI? What do you think?
Good.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful to see.
I think it's awesome to see. Did you see that Zara Larsson is like kind of being cancelled for reposting one of those like strawberry banana AI stories?
Oh my God.
Not like fully cancelled, but like, you know, dragged. Put on notice. Yeah. And I, okay, ashamedly.
Oh my God. You've been watching Smitty Fruit.
I love those stupid fruit. And then someone on TikTok was like, if you like those stupid, like, fucking fruit stories, like, you actually just need to go see, like, Paint Dry or something like that and just, like, read me. And then from then on, I said, not interested. So I don't watch them anymore.
Rewinding, like, 30 seconds because I missed out on crucial context.
Oh, okay.
The thing, like, the reason that Jeremy O'Hara said that to Sam Altman is because OpenAI just signed a massive partnership with the Department of War in the U.S.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah. That's the specific. I was like, something about what I said didn't paint the full picture.
Well, I hope you listeners like stayed with us.
I hope you got the story.
Yeah. And this is your lesson to stay with the podcast.
But I saw some really interesting discourse on TikTok, which I'll link below. Mm. Essentially talking about the way that, like, if, you know, these, like, massive industrialists of the 21st century mm-hmm. want to be allowed into cultural spaces, then they have to, like, learn to take cultural criticism.
Yeah.
Especially from the cultural producers whose, lives they're jeopardizing. And
yeah.
I'm like, actually, great insight there.
Totally. It's kind of why I'm, like, a little bit disappointed with the amount of, like, Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez, I think her last name is. Like, Jeff Bezos is, like, Amazon.
And she's the wife?
And she's the wife. Yeah. And, like, they're
from
at,
Venice.
Like, every, yes, they're at every, like, social or, like, entertainment event. They were at the Oscars Vanity Fair after party. And so I was like, what are you doing? Like, Ariana, what are you doing there? And Laura Roach, which is Zendaya's stylist, is also Lauren's stylist. And I hate that because Laura is like, what?
No, I'm just listening.
Oh, okay.
I'm shaking my head at the story.
Totally. I thought you were shaking head at my take. but it was really disappointing to see because Laura, I would say, is a really big architect of style and has done so much for the press junket, like, style phenomenon and, like, dressing method. And it just, I was really disappointed to see him, like, sell out, basically.
Yeah.
But also, at the same time, I wonder, like, looking at her outfits, if he has, like, gotten in and is, like, sabotaging her. Because those outfits are terrible. Like,
wow.
They're so terrible. But I wonder what Zendaya feels about it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because I feel like she is on the left. But, how could you be associated with that?
Do you remember what she wore to the first June premiere?
Yes.
Archival. Who was it? They do the alien perfume that's in the star. Oh fuck, what's their name?
The robot suit? Mugler?
Mugler.
Yeah. Oh,
that archival Mugler.
Yeah. It was everything and more.
I think about that all the time.
It's so good. And Lore did so well with that. He's certainly not doing that for Lauren.
Well, on the topic of selling out, and this is, I understand you were setting up a great segue for your next topic.
Okay.
And I am fucking you up here.
No, that's okay. Are you, like, coming for me? Am I selling out?
No. Okay. How do you feel about the $250 million that Kylie Minogue was accepted to do a 60-minute set at Anthony Pratt's party last weekend?
Oh, I didn't know about
this.
Do you
know Anthony Pratt?
No.
He's, like, one of Australia's richest men.
Okay.
He's, like, big in the recycling industry.
Okay.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah.
In 2019, I actually did a musical which was funded by his wife's philanthropy.
Totally. I thought your conflict of interest was going to be I recycle.
But anywho, and okay, I just
totally.
Think that's so tea because it was a
he
massive
was at the
party.
Met Gala. This man is straight. Okay.
Anthony Pratt.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, his wife.
Okay.
His wife who funded me.
Okay. Do you want to see his fit from the Met Gala?
That's crazy. But guess who else was there? Jacinta Allen and Anthony Albanese. And I'm like, that's tea.
Interesting.
It's just very much like, you know, like politics and money.
Hand in hand and padum padum, babe.
And what's going on there?
And no one's ever said that before. Some real original takes here.
I know. Anywho, back to you.
Okay.
The red carpets, I think you had something to say.
Nice segue. Okay, did you see Jake Shane as the Vanity Fair after party red carpet host?
It was difficult to find him in the crowd.
Yeah. Was that a short joke?
Yeah.
Oh, mean. I don't like
land.
It. I don't like it. You're better than that.
I'm 6 foot.
Ryan, I'm going to cancel you like they canceled Zara Larsson, okay? But yes, Jake Shane was one of the hosts. There were a couple others with him. There was Quinlan Blackwell and also Brittany Broski. Quinlan and Jake like did it together, and then Brittany was like at a different screen, and they like, you know, altered like back and forth between them. I thought Brittany did a really good job, actually. I feel like she had her research down. She had like really like thoughtful like questions, I guess. Like, there's not supposed to be like heartbreaking journalism or anything like that, but it was a fun old time,
her
right?
Her banter with Chloe Zhao?
Yeah.
Ugh,
incredible. Sorry. Anyone who can have banter with Chloe Zhao is awesome, because I think I would be so scared to like speak to her. And, okay, side note. So sorry. But Ryan sent me a video, and Chloe Zhao wants to become
a death doula.
She's the director of Hamlet. Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. Death doula, I know.
Yeah. She's so interesting.
But the more I read about her directing practice, I'm just like, wow. Because like they would like often end like emotional days on set with like dance shots.
To Rihanna.
Well, assorted songs.
Yes.
Like, I watched an interview with, like, the child star who was like, when we film my death scene, then we dance to Staying Alive. And I'm like, oh.
Dream.
Great.
So good. Anyways, back to the red carpet. So Jake kind of, you know, did what he usually does online. He's an online personality. He has therapists as the, like, his podcast. He's a good, I think, a good, you know, host on his own podcast. You know, he raved, he overshared, he kind of treated, like, the interviews like bits, I would say. But the moment that really blew up online was when he involved the Oscar-nominated film If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, which Rose Byrne is in that. That's all. Rose Byrne, is that who I'm talking about? Let's see if that's
from Orange is the New Black.
No. Rose Byrne is an Australian actress. She was in Bridesmaids.
Good for
okay.
her.
She's great. You should look her up. I thought she was best dressed at the Oscars. Anyways, so in one clip that is now everywhere, he tells Julia Fox that the child character in the film was so damn annoying right after she's just described the movie as every mother's story. Julia is like a single mom, and wow. She's like, you know, she's like, oh no, like the kid like had like issues, and like tried to like pivot to like the wider point about how society sets mothers up to fail, which is like the premise of the movie. And instead of like dropping the joke, he like tries it on another actor, Damson Idris.
The same joke.
The same joke. Being like, isn't that kid annoying? Anyways, it obviously didn't land, because it dismissed like the entirety of the film, right? And the kid is like sick. So like, anyways, it's all hullabaloo. I said it was okay in my brain to myself in the conversation that I had before this podcast
recording.
And now
you're saying it aloud.
And now I'm saying it out loud, that it was okay for me to talk about it this week, because I thought that actually the criticism really didn't like snowball very much until maybe like the start or like the end of last week. And people are really coming down on Jake Shane and influences in general about why they shouldn't be on red carpets and like why they shouldn't be red carpet reporters. Variety even like ran like a whole article about like that Jake Shane proved the fact that influencers shouldn't be red carpet reporters. Also, randomly, side note, Kris Jenner was so funny. She like spoke to Jake Shane. She was like, how'd you get this to gig? And that was like one of her questions, which I thought was so funny. I, as a person who is a journalist and also, you know, has influencer friends, I would say, who are cross journalists and influencers and blah, blah, blah. I think that the Oscars after party red carpet is not a place for like hard-hitting journalism.
No.
That's not like what it's for. I think it's for entertainment. And I would say
influencers get views.
And influencers get views. And I don't think that like anybody else has ever done like hard-hitting like journalism on the carpet like that. I think that you put a lot of pressure on journalists, because like if a journalist put like was in that role, I don't think they'd be doing that either. Do I think that Jake Shane should have been more prepared for whatever he's doing, like what he was doing on the carpet? Absolutely. But do I think that he deserves like all this criticism? Like he had like an earlier interview with Rolling Stone about how he said, I'm not a journalist. Like I'm an influencer. Like I'm here to entertain. Like,
I'm really interested by that.
Yeah, I was interested too.
He was talking on his podcast about how like he'll just delete anything that any celebrity wants.
Yeah.
From, like, the interviews. And,
yeah.
Like, it's all about, like, their discretion and stuff. And
yes.
He's like materially, I'm not a journalist. I'm just here to engage and, like, get, like, create access to these celebrities in a different way to journalism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I find interesting. Brittany Broski said the same thing.
Yeah.
And about Royal Court. And so I think there's, like, I have two differing opinions. I think the red carpet stuff, I think people went too far with it. I think people's, like, criticism was, like, out of pocket. And, like, if you really wanted to support, like, where are you actually supporting journalism? Like,
protect
no one's.
Jake.
Yeah. Protect. Okay, he's fine. But, like, but, like, I think, you know, no one's actually, like, showing up for the journalists, like, other than to criticize the influencer, you know? Like,
literally.
Who is, you know, subscribing?
It was everyone attacking Timothy defending Oprah. Not
yes,
buying tickets to the
exactly,
opera.
Exactly. So
you,
like,
could pay for journalism if you
put
wanted.
Put your puss in it, you know?
Yeah.
Your therapist in it. So you didn't like that? That was such a good line.
I loved it.
Anyways.
I'm sure the listeners will love it too.
You needed the validation. Am I like an influencer? Anyways, I do think when it comes to the podcast, though, and him saying that he doesn't, that he, like, edits out whatever, I think I've definitely been in a place where, like, someone will come back to me and they'll be like, can you please take this out,
yeah,
like, of an interview or whatever? And it's definitely something, it's a case-to-case situation for me. Like, sometimes the article is just, like, not worth it if it's not an entirety of truth. If I can still paint the same picture, or, like, it still, you know, has the same message or whatever, then, and I take out just, like, a random comment that, like, maybe they don't want to, like,
sure,
include, like, for privacy reasons. Like, you know, like case-to-case, whatever. Then that's fine, you know. But I think because it's a podcast, it can, because we're in a media literacy crisis, it confuses the consumer and the viewer and reader when you're setting it up like a journalistic experience,
yeah,
and then saying it's an entertaining experience. And I don't know if you can have it both ways, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're against sort of the structure of, like, these podcasts and, like, the way that they frame themselves as journalism and stuff.
I am against them absolving the responsibility of journalism, because you've taken up, I think that podcasts in general, like, interview style podcasts,
you,
like,
think they've come for journalism's throat.
Well, I think that the framework exists in a way,
yeah,
that you're, you know, like, questioning things and you're, like, finding out things and you're like, storytelling. And that's a key part
of
journalism.
Puff pieces.
I think, you know, puff pieces have, like, its place in journalism, maybe. I'm not saying that it has to be a hard-hitting situation every single time, but I don't think that, like, you can't, like, put your hands up and just do anything you want and say, oh, but I'm not a journalist. I'm just funny. I think it's the same as, like, entertainers in general, or, like, last week when we were talking about celebrities and having, like,
political,
a duty of care. Like, everything is political. It's moral of the story. Everything has an influence. Everything has an impact. And for you to just say that it's entertainment and, like, absolve yourself of that impact, I don't think is fair.
Yeah. I mean, like, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think, as far as influences go, Brittany and Jake, I would say, are on the woker end of the spectrum.
I think.
Do you know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
I think... Particularly with Brittany, I'm like, I could definitely get the vibe that they're very, like, aware of their responsibility in this space,
mm-hmm,
broadly,
mm-hmm,
you know?
I don't know so much about Jake's, like, political position, to be honest.
Well, he's gay, so,
that
know,
means nothing.
I would assume he had,
I mean, it does
blue,
mean something.
No matter who.
I think it means something, but, like, you know, he's still a gay white man. So, like.
Well, yeah.
You know? And he's, like, friends with, like, billionaires, essentially, like Sophia,
yeah,
Richie's, like, his best friend because of who she married, who's, like, a millionaire. Yes. But yeah, I don't know. Like, Call Her Daddy is another example, I guess. I guess the example that's the clearest of, or the clearest blurry line, you know, of journalism and entertainment, because,
yeah,
it's just an interview styled podcast except for her solo ones that she does, and she has these incredible guests and hit and does these, like, semi hard-hitting questions and then falters at the end, so, and then blames it on entertainment, you know? I don't know. Maybe I just want our podcast to do really well and I'm jealous, and I'm a jealous freak, you know? Who knows?
I mean, I've been thinking for a while now that I need to, like, start some fake feud on the internet, you know,
mm-hmm,
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what yet, but yeah. I'm just like, I'm really feeling that 2026 is the year that I fake being cancelled.
Is this your entry into the manosphere? That's how
No, not cancelled like that. Like, cancelled for something else.
Okay, what?
I don't know.
Don't do it.
No, I like, less like cancelled, but more like me and someone else, we have a very public fight. You know
maybe
I mean?
You should like repost Strawberry falling in love with a banana.
I won't be doing that.
That's insane. Me fighting a person? That's okay. I draw the line.
Of course.
Yeah, totally.
Broadly News.
What's happening in news, Ryan?
Well, so Israeli and American aggression in Iran enters its fourth week, which is crazy because, mm-hmm. like, what's going on there? And I was scrolling to ABC, our local news source, when I read a really interesting article about residents in Alice Springs being concerned about the role that Pine Gap is playing in the U.S. strikes in the Middle East.
Mm.
Now, you're across what Pine Gap is, but not everyone may be. So let me explain. Pine Gap is an American military base, like, just outside Alice Springs, which, I have to tell you the funny fact about it.
okay.
Anyway, it was set up in the 60s, and, like, it downloads, like, a lot of data from, like, American satellites and distributes them. Like, a lot of American intelligence around the world comes through Pine Gap.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of places in Pine Gap where, like, ostensibly it's, like, in Australia, but, like, Australian armed forces aren't allowed. Like, it's, like, beyond their, like, remit. Anyhow, did you know why Alice Springs is sometimes known to some people as the lesbian capital of Australia?
No, I did not know that.
So, in the Vietnam War, I think it was the Vietnam War. Don't quote me on that. Don't check me. but there was a lot of, there was a bit massive protest organized against the role that Pine Gap was playing in the war. And that was led by a lot of very feminist groups. They were really feminist, you guys.
Yeah, the most feminist.
And so they organized, like, this massive protest. And then basically a lot of the people who, like, went there just, like, stayed in Alice Springs. And it just so happened that a lot of the people who were in that protest were lesbian.
Oh.
And so because of this one protest against Pine Gap, Alice Springs per capita has, like, some of the most lesbians in the country.
No way.
Yeah, per capita.
Because lesbianism is genetic also.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But also, that's fascinating. Anywho, so Pine Gap is, like, a massive part of the American Imperial Intelligence Services. That's not a term. I just said that for drama.
Okay.
but it was just this really interesting thing of, like, interviews with, like, locals who are concerned because they have, like, family in Iran and stuff,
mm-hmm.
who are concerned about the role that the intelligence is playing. And also then some interviews with academics who are talking about the way that, like, if we as a sovereign nation are facilitating the collection of information that is facilitating attacks on, for example, schools in Iran getting bombed.
Yeah.
Then we are, like, we're not just, like, as Albanese is trying to, like, pretend doing some little defense on the side.
Yeah.
Like, we're actually, like, quite active participants because, you know.
Well, yeah, that's, like, an interesting point you bring. It's also the surveillance plane that we sent,
yeah,
the Edge Tail, the information that comes from that goes to a hub, like an international hub. So,
yeah.
And the US is part of that and can access that information. And Australia is like, yeah, they can do that, you know. We're not doing it, like, for them, but it happens to be. And it's like, okay, well, let's put the pieces together then, you know.
Absolutely.
And yeah, we are, like, active in that war.
And I just keep hearing things about this war and I get angry.
Yes.
You know, it's bad.
I'm going to keep that in.
I think I will.
Okay.
What's your news?
Us after every news thing, it's bad and the world sucks. Okay, that's our take. No, I think we had good takes in there, don't worry.
Do you know what's interesting, though?
Yeah.
I'm like, because I Googled Pine Gap America earlier, and I'm like, am I on a list? Is the ASD looking at me now?
That's a good point.
The Australian Signals Directorate?
Surely we're on the list already.
I mean, we know that government agencies have listened to this podcast before.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we actually materially know that. I'm like, I'm sure the ASD is, like, looking at our transcripts, you know?
I like it. Hi, yeah. Pookie.
thanks for helping with our engagement.
Thank you so much. If you can sort the petrol, that'd be great. Okay, my news thing is today, for work, I got to cover the teacher strikes in Victoria.
Hell yeah.
Up to around 30,000 Victorian public school teachers, principals, and education support staff striked today in a statewide action, the first major strike of its kind here in about 13 years. And the Australian Education Union says up to 500 government schools were either closed today or like running skeleton supervision. So like just like one to two teachers sort of situation at the school. And they overwhelmingly voted to take industrial action. So this all comes after more than 8 months of bargaining with the Victorian government over wages, workload, and school funding. The government's current offer is roughly at 17% to like 17 to 18.5% pay rise over 4 years, with different components for teachers and support staff. But the union is pushing for something closer to 35% increase over 3 years, plus changes to class sizes and workload. And it was a huge turnout. Honestly, it was really lovely. One of the loveliest strikes that I've been to, I have to say. Like, everyone was very...
you actually attended.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I covered that today. Yeah.
Hell yeah. At Parliament?
At Parliament. At Trade Hall to Parliament.
Well, yeah. Yeah, Trades Hall.
Yes.
On the running to become a UNESCO World Heritage listed site.
No way.
Yes.
Very interesting.
For being one of the oldest trades halls in the world.
The head of trades union? Is that correct? Yeah. She was there as well.
She's so cool.
So cool. And...
what's her name?
I don't know.
I also forgot.
Respect woman is the thing. Let me see. Let me see. Sally McManus is the secretary and primary leader of the Australian Council of Trade Unions. And she was there.
Great.
Awesome. Anyway, she's really cool. Also, I heard someone say, like, teachers at the back. And I was like, that's so funny. I thought that was the best thing ever. Anyways, this is not the only strike that is happening this week. At the same time, at the time of recording, it'll be tomorrow. So, like, the day that... we published this podcast, so today, ABC staff around the country have voted to strike in what's being described as the first major industrial action at the national broadcaster in roughly two decades. So journalists, producers, and other staff are staging a 24-hour walkout that's also expected to, like, take live programs off the air. And because management has reportedly offered about a 10% pay rise over 3 years and a one-off $1,000 bonus. But a majority of union members, the MEAA union, voted it down, citing pay, job security, and staffing levels. So basically, we have two strikes going on. You have the teacher's strike and you have the ABC workers' strike. Yes, tell me.
Are you in the MEAA?
Yes.
Very good.
Yeah. Are you? Are we in the same union?
Entertainment workers do fall into the MEAA, but yeah. I'm not technically a member.
Why?
Because I don't have a full-time job in the entertainment industry.
But you can be a contractor and be part of it.
I know. I just haven't gotten down to it.
Okay.
But I have been a member of unions before, okay? Don't at me.
Wow. Fake union fan.
I used to be a big NTEU
fan. What would
NTEU
Sally McManus say?
No, I love Trades Hall.
Anyways, I thought it was very interesting because I was speaking to some people at the protest and then also just, you know, general people in my life. And they were saying, you know, like, do strikes actually work? You know, like, what do they actually achieve? I think some people were maybe, like, nervous about, like, what this will achieve. And I wanted to look through history down memory lane of some classic examples of where strikes worked. So in 1986, nurses and midwives striked, and that went for 50 days and saw nurses walk off wards, shut beds, and even withdraw for some critical care areas as the dispute escalated. It was pretty unprecedented at the time, but by the end of that dispute, nurses had won a package worth around $30 million. Including wage increases, the restoration of qualification allowances, and a new career structure. So that's pretty free and awesome, guys. And then another one was an education one, New South Wales, a 28-day strike at the Warrala High School back in the 70s, often described as the longest teachers' strike in Australia, helped staff secure entitlements for disadvantaged schools that then flowed across the entire system. I did want to, like, talk about, I guess, it's really hard to go on strike in Australia because they're legal, obviously. You have to, like, fall under, like, the Fair Work, like, Commission. Like, you have to, like, get the sign off, basically. So under Australia's Fair Work system, most large scale strikes in the private and public sectors have to be protected industrial action. So this means that, like, bargaining already has to happen before that. This is, I think it's because like someone was like, can I strike like my company? And I was like, I think you have to like engage like with the bargaining and like the Fair Work Commission and your union, like all before this. And I think that's important to know. But I think it's interesting that we're so revolting like against the institution at a time in the world where it's like the institution is letting us down, you know?
Yeah. I get why, like I understand the reason that there's legislation that you have to, everything has to be signed off, but mm-hmm. also like,
I know. Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's the same thing with like when all the protests have to be approved. And I'm like,
yeah,
actually the point of these actions is disruption and actually fuck you government.
Totally. You know? I think it's also like, people do it so that they're protected in a way, because like when you're taking, you're absolutely. Striking for the day, you don't get paid. Like, yes. And if you're not just like showing up to work, like they can like use that against you and fire
yes,
you.
Yes, of course.
So you need things in writing. But again, you're right. Like it's a very odd system.
Did you know Melbourne is where the 8-hour workday comes from?
No way.
Yeah. Have you been to Trades Hall?
Yes. I was there 2 weekends ago with you.
What the fuck were we doing there?
We were there for Georgie's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That building doesn't have it, but a lot of the carpets in the heritage part of the, in the older part of the building have the numbers 888 everywhere. Because the 8-hour workday, like, I think Victoria was the first jurisdiction to, like, recognize, like, to legislate 8 hours work, 8 hours rest, 8 hours play, which is just crazy heritage. So there's, like, a whole statue dedicated to the 8-hour workday across the road.
That is very interesting. Yeah. Also, this is a random thing, but I predicted that there would be many strikes and walkouts in the sense that I watched a tarot reading at the start of the year saying that this time of year that would happen.
Oh,
and
tarot.
I find
it.
Yeah.
I was like, terror?
No, just because I'm brown. All right. Okay. But yeah, the tarot never lies.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I hope it works. And I hope if it doesn't work, they do it again.
Because... Well, yeah, that's what they said. They said if you don't give, like, you know, a reasonable or appropriate...
Well, we have some of the lowest paid teachers in the country.
Yes, we do.
Did you say that?
Yes.
Fuck my drag.
Oh, no. I don't know if I did, actually. But we do. You're right.
And it's a problem.
And it's a problem. But hopefully we fix it. I liked... They all wore red, which was nice. I love a matching outfit.
Yeah, in my head, I was like, what are the optics of this? Because, like...
Wearing red?
Because red labor.
Yeah.
But okay. Then I was like, I guess you're also protesting a labor government. So I guess it's fine for you to wear red.
I'll let them know.
Do you know what I mean? I think it would have been weirder if they wore blue.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
No, totally. What do you think is like the best color to wear?
I also probably not green.
What about purple?
Purple. I think the NTEU often is purple. The National Tertiary Education Union.
True.
Yeah.
So everyone wear purple tomorrow.
Broadly recommended?
That's right. We have a new segment. It's not actually new. We did it last month. But if you're new here, it's new for you. Every month. Every month, Ryan and I tell you our recommended what to watch, listen to, and...
Read.
we forgot. What are you listening to?
Okay. I need to recommend... I think it's like the 2007 album Burial. The 2007 album Untrue by the artist Burial.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the history of dubstep.
No, I can't say that I am.
That's so fine. So dubstep emerges in Britain out of the British house scene in like the early 2000s. And it was initially this like genre of music very much like urban, not slow, but ambient and like the bass was like not the dubstep that you're thinking of.
Okay.
So this album is kind of like quintessential original dubstep and it is like the most almost relaxing and like almost sorrowful like album about life in cities. It is phenomenal listening. It's just like, I don't know, truly when I like first listened to it, like, I don't know, 4 years ago, crazy.
Are you re-listening now?
Re-listening massively because I've been really getting back into dubstep.
Okay.
And so like, you know, like half the time I'm like listening to Skrillex and the other half the time I'm like, no, we need to like learn about where dubstep came from.
So true. You know? So true.
So recommending Untrue by Burial.
Okay, speaking of history, my recommendation is a history podcast. Yeah, do you love that segue? That was crazy. Because I had more things to say about your dubstep, and what? I said, no, I love the segue so much that I'm going
to
keep
what
it.
What did you have to say?
Well, I was just going to be like, I think it's crazy that you love dubstep. I think it's so unexpected of you. But then one day you told me that you actually don't really listen to lyrics, you more so listen to the beat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're opposite in that.
Well, I also think dubstep is as a particular, so what you think of when you think of dubstep, which mm-hmm. is like Skrillex and like mm-hmm. the music that emerges like early 2010s,
yeah.
that's a subsect of dubstep called brostep, and that's the Americanized, like popularized yeah. version, which like has those like, it's really frenetic and energetic and like the constant drops, but yeah. that's not what dubstep is. Dubstep okay. is just like playing with like bass in a really interesting way. But I like both, is the thing.
Okay.
Because they just kind of turn your brain off and you're like, buh, 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 you know?
Sure. Yeah. Standing in solidarity with yeah. Burstep.
But also sometimes they're just like, buh, buh, you know?
Wow. It's like I was listening to the album right there.
Anywho, back to your segue, your history podcast. Tell me about it.
Okay, it's a podcast called Found Objects, and it's actually an old podcast. Like, the last episode was in 2024, but I revisited it. It's by this creator called Katie Bellotti, and I have been following her since I was a wee lass, you know? And she used to do, like moving into college, and, like, this is my college dorm kind of YouTube videos. And then she started a history podcast, and she kind of just goes over different just like stories like from the world, you know, and just like unpacks it in beautiful. One go. Like this one that I really liked was How to Get Away with Murder, History of Heiress Doris Duke. And it's about this this heiress and whether or not she murdered her friend and if the butler murdered her, you know.
So phenomenal.
Phenomenal. I love that. I think it's really fun. Speaking of influences and how they like create and podcast and things like that, when they create a history podcast. I think it's fun when they have like, they niche it down as opposed to like an interview or a pop culture or news podcast. Am I canceling us?
We could do a history section.
Broadly history. And we just, it's like horrible histories.
We'd have to do a lot more prep for that.
Yeah, we would.
But like, I'm not opposed.
I think the moral of the story is that people need to comment on this podcast and like our stuff so that we can quit our jobs and do this full time. Okay.
But also I think as a people, we need to understand our history.
So true.
That's all.
So true. So true. Agreed. What are you watching?
So I just watched the movie Pillion, which is a film. It's like, it's been described as like dom-com, and it's like about BDSM, and it's like about this like guy who like has, who kind of stumbles into a very dom sub relationship where he's the submissive and like he kind of loves it, but it's also not perfect. And then, you know, like things happen, and it was just like tonally perfect because it was like Call Me By Your Name, but if it was kinky, but it also wasn't like, you know, when you're watching softcore pornography, heated rivalry, like it wasn't like that. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like it, I don't know. It was like a great film.
Okay.
Great film. Like Plain Clothes, but like better.
Okay.
Do you know Plain Clothes?
I don't think I do.
It's another gay film.
Totally.
Totally.
Okay. Put it in the Brex.
Your recommendation?
My recommendation is, okay, so this is like not a real recommendation. It's a bit of a cop-out, but it's what I've been watching and like spending my time looking at. I type in to TikTok, AI book pulled, and it's about this book, this author whose book
Hachette.
Was pulled. Hachette.
Is that really how you pronounce it?
I don't know.
Because that's how I've seen all the influencers say it. And I'm like, I fully
What are you talking about? I'm talking about Shy Girl.
Yeah. Published by Hachette.
Oh, okay.
Or
totally.
Is it Hatchet?
Hatchet.
I saw an influencer say Hachette. And I was like, I guess it's Hachette.
I don't know. Maybe it can be both. We'll alternate. So anyways, Shy Girl by Mia Ballard was pulled from publication after accusations of AI use. And I'm not going to spoil everything because it's literally my recommendation to go look at TikToks about it. But I spent 2 hours just like deep diving into every single thing and like the tells of AI. And it's very interesting.
Read the book?
No, I didn't read the book. But I found the, interesting conversation about what AI tells are and like what you're kind of taught as good writing as well, which is, you know, like it's not X, but it's Y, like that kind of pattern. But that's a kind of, it's, you're just like taught how to write that. And the vilification of M dashes, like very sad.
Because it's like really just like common copywriting techniques is like half of AI writing.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like...
And I'm like, the concept of writing copy for like my friend's show, I'm like, how do I make it not sound like AI?
Not sound like AI, which sucks that it has to be a consideration at all.
Let me go and invite like a whole new convention for the genre.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And aren't you doing enough, you know?
I know.
Moral of the story, fund the arts.
What are you reading?
I am reading a Substack. Sorry, let me just get it up. I forgot. But
crazy. And you're recommending it?
I'm recommending a Substack called For the Culture by Chris Volsey. I follow Chris Volsey on TikTok. She's an incredible creator. She does a lot of talk about how reality TV is intertwined with politics and culture and relationships. Her bio in the Substack is J.D. Vance's worst nightmare, cat lady, black, former public defender, and yapper. And I think that about sums it up. One of her latest posts is Southern Charm, White Comfort, and People Who Refuse to Do Politics. She just has really good takes and like pulls from like different, she has like the references in her brain, you know?
I love a
person who can do that. I don't really have that skill. And I really admire people who do. And she doesn't have enough like flowers or subscribers, so definitely go check that one out. It'll be in the link in bio. What are you reading?
I have, to continue the theme of like union action, read this gorgeous essay from Sabrina Hersey-Issa, who is a human rights technologist committed to leveraging innovation as a tool to unlock opportunity and dignity for all. And I'm subscribed to a newsletter and I really love it. And this is a whole article talking about the recent new collective bargaining agreement that the Women's National Basketball Players Association in the US got with their players, basically talking about the strategies that they employed as like a league. Is that what you call it? Like a league? What the players in the league employed to like get the WNBA to pay them more.
Yeah.
And basically how like what their salary, the salary cap used to be. I don't know, but basically the current minimum salary is higher than what the old maximum salary used to be because of the collective bargaining. And it's just like an incredible story of like solidarity and collectivism.
Absolutely.
And unionization.
Yeah.
And it's just like, more of that, please.
It is one of my most favorite stories that has come out of this month. So definitely go check that out.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful piece of writing as well. I'm like, you know what? Maybe the world is going to be okay. So.
Shall we check out?
Let's check out. What's your favorite union?
Mine. The MEAA.
Oh, okay.
What's yours?
Can I mention two?
Okay.
The Public Transport Users Association of Victoria is a union of public transport users, and they do advocacy towards the state government.
Totally.
It's public transport. And also the Black People's Union, which I am not aware of, in Victoria as well.
Yeah.
They do a lot of advocacy around equalization and rights for Black people, which is really cool.
In this moment, you are better than me.
I was like, come up with something fun.
Sorry. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked this episode, go subscribe to our socials. We do more on there. Tell a friend. Subscribe to our Substack. We'll have more tea coming in next week.
Join your union.
Have a great day. Bye. Love you.